airchecks.com.
Good evening and good morning and welcome to the Steve Lavelli broadcast from WBZ in Boston, where we have a big 50 degrees at 8 minutes after midnight. We're here all night long to celebrate. Yeah. Happy anniversary to WBZ. I get to be the first one to say it. We're 90 years old today. Happy birthday. Happy anniversary. Happy, happy. That's kind of cool, huh? I was asked on Facebook over the last few days, would I play tonight my original recordings of my very first show back in 1921? And that would be nice. It was a great thought. It was a great thought. It would be nice to hear who I was interviewing that night 90 years ago. Unfortunately, as I had to tell the person who asked this question, at the 25th anniversary celebration back in 1946, I spilled coffee all over the original tapes. Yeah. I know. I'm really sorry. It was my fault, too. At the time, I tried to blame it on Don Batting, but it really was my fault. So we won't have that tonight. But instead, we have a guy who's been listening to this show since 1921. Well, not really. Because this show wasn't on in 1921. In fact, I don't think anything was on at this hour in 1921. But we'll talk about that and a whole lot of other things having to do with the history of WBZ. With my guest tonight, Scott Feibusch, who I've described in plugging tonight's program as a radio historian. He's a broadcaster himself. He is a reporter of things that are of interest to those of us in this business. He has been the guy who's put out what used to be a New England Radio Watch and now, for a number of years, Northeast Radio Watch. It was a newsletter. It's a blog. It's a website. It's a whole family of publications. Scott Feibusch, Feibusch.com is his website, and you start from there, and you can go off in all kinds of directions and find out all kinds of information about what's going on in radio today, as well as radio history. And as a matter of fact, I got one of his calendars. Some of you know about the Tower Side calendars. I've got one right here in my hand. I'm one of the first people to have one. We'll talk about this in a little while. But Scott Feibusch, welcome to the broadcast.
I am delighted to be back here. One piece he didn't mention was that I used to work here.
That's right. Oh, I meant to do that. Yes, yes. In the 1990s, you worked here in our news department. And I was asking you before the show, because I was working here then, too. When did you leave here?
I left here in 1997. It feels like about yesterday most of the time. I walked into the building, and I think everything's still on my desk where I left it.
Yeah, probably, except for the things that people have taken. But that happened within the first 24 hours.
Exactly.
Because you can't leave anything in the newsroom. Where are you working today? You're in upstate New York today.
I am based out of Rochester, New York. I do some work on the public radio station up there, WXXI. And do a lot of writing and a lot of studying about the history of radio. I do the website. I edit another radio industry engineering publication called the Radio Journal, which is hardcore engineering for hardcore engineers, I guess. And put out the Tower Site calendar, and I travel around taking pictures of radio stations and put those up on the website, too.
And so what started as a hobby you turned into a job?
It kind of turned out that way. Yeah. I never expected. It was just a little thing I did during off hours when I was working here, and somehow it actually turned into a way to make a living. Who knew?
Now, I've also mentioned in leading up to tonight that you were much involved in putting together the 75th anniversary of this radio station, all the various programming and clips and stuff like that 15 years ago. Now you're here for this one. You were saying to me before the show that one of the interesting things about this radio station is pretty much from the beginning, they were smart enough to note their history as the years were rolling on. You said to me that in 1931, they did a 10th anniversary celebration.
There was a 10th anniversary celebration at a time when nobody thought of radio yet as something that had a history. But they did a celebration in 31. They did a big 50th anniversary celebration in 71. There was a 58th anniversary celebration. Ken Meyer did a whole big 58th anniversary celebration. Why not? I did one in 93 when TV was having their 45th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
We did a whole two-hour show with David Brudnoy and brought back a lot of the old-time jocks. It was, I think, the last time Carl D'Souza was on the air here, among other things. It's a history worth recognizing.
Now, back in 1921, if we could set the scene a little bit, for people who actually had radios in this general area in 1921, before this station came on, what could people have picked up? What was there to listen to on your radio before WBZ came on?
If you had a radio, first of all, you made it yourself. You could not go down to a store yet and actually buy a ready-made radio. So it was something that you would have made yourself out of miscellaneous parts and pieces that were probably surplus from World War One. And most of what you would have heard at that point would have been in Morse code rather than in voice. There was very little that you would have identified as being broadcasting per se. If you had a good receiver and a good antenna and the conditions were right, you might have heard KDKA out of Pittsburgh, our sister station back in those halcyon early years of Westinghouse. You might have heard WJZ out of Chicago. I'm sorry, KYW out of Chicago, WJZ out of Newark came along about the same time. You might have heard a little station up in Medford Hillside called 1XE, or later known as WGI. And, of course, Donna Helper, who will be sitting in the seat tomorrow,
yes,
is the world expert on all things related to 1XE, so she'll be able to talk in great detail. Ask her about Eunice Randall.
Okay.
Do not miss asking her about Eunice Randall. That's a great story right there. But you would have heard things only very sporadically. It would not have been much of anything that you would have recognized as being organized, large-scale broadcasting. There would have been a selection here and there. You might have heard somebody playing the piano or singing. They were actually on 1XE. They were doing children's programming. Eunice Randall would read kids' stories. Again, Donna can tell you more about this than you would ever want to know, believe me. But Eunice Randall, by the way, was just recognized by the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
They inducted her just this past week.
So, yeah, Eunice Randall.
Now, what is it that we are celebrating today? We'll let the answer to this question wait until after the break. When we come back with Scott Feibusch, we'll talk about what we're celebrating today. What exactly happened 90 years ago today involving this radio station? We're here until 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about WBZ and its history all night. And the first couple of hours, Scott Feibusch, radio historian, is our guest. We'll take some phone calls a little bit later. If you want to call in, you're going to be holding on for a while, but you can do that. 617-254-1030 is our number. We'll be right back on WBZ.
Call Steve LaValle at 617-254-1030 or toll free at 888-WBZ-1030. That's 888-929-1030. Your business bank should deliver all the basic banking solutions you need, but some banks deliver more. They understand what's important to the business owner. Just ask any Middlesex Savings Bank business customer.
My name is Mark Wiffle. I'm the president of Alpha Analytical, an environmental company, and also Boston Analytical, a pharmaceutical company. What I like most about working with Middlesex is how responsive they are to our needs. They've been part of our strategic discussions in terms of how we intended to grow the company. There have been acquisitions, businesses that we've acquired in a very short time frame that required Middlesex to support us. That's what I like most about them, is they understand our business, and they've been flexible. Middlesex never wavered, regardless of what was going on in the financial world, and they never wavered in their support of us.
To find out how to get more from your business banking relationship, contact Executive Vice President David Falwell directly at 508-315-5411. Middlesex Savings Bank, where you're worth more. Member FDIC, member DIF.
All right, calm down. Tonight, it's the season premiere of How I Met Your Mother, followed by the premiere of the new 2.5 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I know, the excitement has been building all summer, but you have to relax. We're talking comedy history. Who isn't dying to find out what's going to happen? Wait. Calm down. Then the executive producer of Sex and the City brings you TV's most anticipated new comedy, Two Broke Girls. Breathe. Premiere Monday, tonight, only CBS.
I'm okay.
Football season is here, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to tailgate. Visit tailgatefan.com. Choose your location, invite your friends, and party hard. A tailgate can happen anywhere, but all great tailgates start at tailgatefan.com.
Walk the walk to your telephone and talk the talk to Steve Lavelle on WBZ News Radio 1030.
After midnight. And before we go back to our guest, I want to give a shout out to Edith in Natick. Edith sent me a nice little letter about being a WBZ listener over many years. As a matter of fact, WBZ is 90 years old today, September 19th, and Edith in Natick is 90 years old today, September 19th. Happy birthday, Edith.
Yeah, Edith.
Thank you very much for listening all these years, and thanks for listening to the broadcast. I'm one of her favorite shows. Thank you, Edith. Scott Feibusch, radio historian, is our guest, and we're talking about WBZ. Its 90th anniversary is today. You'll be hearing all kinds of things all day long on the station. And as Scott mentioned, he got the plug in for Donna Halper. Donna Halper, another radio historian and friend of the broadcast, is our guest tomorrow in the first couple of hours of tomorrow's show. So that we start the celebration here and we'll end it here on tomorrow's program. So, Scott, just before the break, I was going into a question about what happened 90 years ago today exactly, or as far as you know, what is it that we are celebrating? What happened on day one on WBZ?
The very first broadcast actually came a few days after the license was granted. And WBZ holds an interesting bit of honor with its license, although it wasn't the first radio station. And you want to get an argument going, get Donna going on what the first radio station actually was. But it was the first station ever to receive an actual commercial broadcasting license, because this whole thing was so new that the Department of Commerce, this was before there was an FCC, the Department of Commerce didn't know what kind of license to issue to these stations. So it actually, when stations like KDKA got their licenses, they were shipped to shore radio licenses. They were just commercial radio licenses like you would have had for a coastal station communicating with vessels at sea. It wasn't until September 15th of 1921 that the Commerce Department said, okay, we're going to establish this new category of license for broadcasting, and the very first one to be issued was issued to Westinghouse in East Springfield, Massachusetts. And on September 19th, I believe in a remote broadcast from the Big E, as a matter of fact, they went on the air with the very first broadcast from towers on the roof of the Westinghouse plant in East Springfield with, I think it was 100 watts at the beginning, if I'm not mistaken. It was some vanishingly small amount of power, but you know, it was one little room on top of the, literally on top of the roof of the building.
Mm-hmm.
It was the studio, it was the master control, it was the transmitter room.
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Well, you were there.
Right. Well, so sure the memory is a little hazy now, you know. That's why I had you here to refresh my memory. How many stations that are still around came on the air before WBZ? I mean, just like a general number. Do you happen to have a guess
at
that?
You could count them on the fingers of one hand.
Really?
Really. There was the station that is claimed in most histories to be the first was our sister station over in Pittsburgh, KDKA, mm-hmm. which came on in November of 1920 with the Harding Cox election night returns, was their first broadcast. They were not, in fact, the first. What they had was the wonderful Westinghouse publicity machinery behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Coleman was doing promos for them at that point. So the when the history books were written, a lot of them said initially on the basis of this massive publicity burst from Westinghouse that KDKA was the first. There were stations that were doing things before KDKA. There was a station in Detroit that's also one of our sister stations now, WWJ, was on the air in the summer of 1920. There were stations in the Midwest at some of the land-grant colleges that were doing what is recognizably broadcast programming. As early as the mid-19-teens and certainly the late teens, and as early as 1909 out in San Jose, California, a guy named Charles Doc Harold was on the air playing music and taking requests.
Wow.
With what was known then simply as San Jose Calling and is today known as yet another one of our sister stations, KCBS. Because in the end, they all come together, you
That's
see.
Right. That's right.
So nobody's fighting as much about who was first anymore now that...
they're all one.
Now that they're all under the same organization. But there were not very many, and a lot of the ones that came around early in 1921 didn't survive either. It wasn't really until 1922 that things just exploded. In the course of 1922, you went from a couple dozen stations to 600, 700 at the end of the year.
It was obviously the business to get into at that point.
It was the internet of 1922, apparently.
There you go. So, aside from day one, what was the general broadcast schedule? Like, what would your average listener, and we'll get into who the heck was listening, but what was your average listener going to find on WBZ on a day-to-day basis? What was a broadcast day like back then?
Very early on, it would have been a matter of just a few hours at night, generally.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been programming that to our ears would sound almost impossibly dry. It would have been whatever talent they could have gotten to come up initially to the rooftop of this building, this factory building in East Springfield, and they'd have to come up a ladder and into this little rickety booth on the roof of the building. That didn't last long. They built studios the next year in a hotel in Springfield. And then eventually they built studios in Boston because they realized that's where more of the talent was. But basically, whoever they could come in and get to play the piano or sing or play the kazoo, if you will, or what have you, there would be educational lectures. They were very big. In fact, one of those vignettes that's been running talks about some of the early educational programming that WBZ did. And they did. They'd have college professors come in and give lengthy lectures on the air because, hey, it filled up airtime.
Mm-hmm.
From time to time, they would actually have to pause and go off the air to listen for distress calls from ships at sea.
Wow.
There's a famous story, another one of the Westinghouse stations in Newark, New Jersey, WJZ. There's a famous story about how their announcer, they got to the 15-minute break they had to take, and they said, "You have heard Madam Whoever singing whatever. We will now pause for distress signals." That didn't last very long. And by the way, everything was on one wavelength at that point. So you pretty much had to hope that you were close enough to whichever transmitter you were trying to hear, because if WBZ was on the air at the same time as 1XE or KDKA or what have you, you might get a mixture of both. You might get neither. You might just get squealing noises from a car going by.
Okay.
It was all very hit or miss back then.
Now, the Springfield to Boston move, how did that happen? I know there's a number of different elements to it, but what's the basic story there?
They realized pretty early on that, Westinghouse initially put these stations where it had manufacturing facilities because mm-hmm. their initial idea was, hey, we can use these to communicate from the Springfield plant to the Newark plant to the Pittsburgh plant. They realized pretty quickly they were in the entertainment business and that they had to be where the audiences were and that they had to be where the performers were. And so as early as 1924, and this was an amazing technical innovation for 1924, they kept the transmitter in Springfield. They put up a second transmitter on top of a hotel in downtown Boston and called it WBZA.
Mm-hmm.
And they linked them up by phone line. Imagine 1924. They had a phone line going from Springfield to Boston. And it was one of the wonders of the radio era that in an instant, they could switch from somebody performing in Springfield to somebody performing in Boston and back. It was a remarkable thing. By 1931, they realized, okay, all the money is to be made in Boston. And they built a new high-power transmitter out in Millis. And that was when the WBZ calls came here. Springfield became WBZA and stayed that way until 1962 when it finally shut down for good.
Now, some people ask me about the three-letter call. And why we have three letters and most stations have four letters. How did that all happen? I know I used to work at the AM for WAAF, the AM formerly having been WAAB, and I know the story about how did they get those call letters. Well, once they started organizing things in Washington, they started issuing, there was WAAA and the WAAB. Okay, so I know some of those stories. But why do we still have some of the stations, the early stations, the oldest stations, only have three letters?
That was what they were issuing. Remember I said at first they didn't have a category of license for broadcasting. And so they didn't have a pool of call letters to use for broadcasting. What call letters had been used for was for identifying vessels at sea and the stations on shore that communicated with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially they just pulled from that pool. The WBZ call sign actually came from a ship that had sunk somewhere, I think, in the Atlantic. As did a lot of these early call signs, and the, you know, the ship owners didn't want that. They thought it was cursed. And so those were available for reassignment. There were all kinds of stories going around that it stood for this or it stood for that. I heard a story once that we were originally supposed to be KBZ. I've never been able to substantiate that. Supposedly, at one point in the 1930s, the FCC thought, okay, we're going to get rid of these three-letter things and standardize. So KDKA was going to become WKA.
Hmm.
They were going to get rid of the K there. It stayed, and it became a badge of honor. You know, if you're listening to a station like WBZ,
right,
that
it's
this
been around
is
for a while.
This is one of the original old-time stations.
I always tell everybody it means We Believe Zelda.
There you go. Wyoming Blasting and Zoning.
There you go. All right.
Bob now, Raleigh, I think that was his line.
Yeah, I think it was. It was mostly, as you say, entertainment programming at first in the 1920s, not necessarily 1921. But you mentioned the next year, the issuance of license explodes. And so obviously they were selling radios at the time, too. So there must have been more listeners if there were more people who wanted to own a radio station. So in the 1920s, as programming became a little bit more sophisticated than maybe it was at the very beginning, it was pretty much all entertainment. I know there was a big battle. I don't know if this was in the 20s or 30s because I cannot remember this from MassCom 101, between newspapers and radio about whether the news could be done on the radio. But basically the 1920s was entertainment programming, right?
It was entertainment and sort of inoffensive educational programming. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one thing you could have a college professor come on and lecture about agriculture conditions in Western Massachusetts. You had people coming on and talking about current events. You had sports. There was sports coverage early on. The Red Sox were on the radio early on. The Bruins were on the radio early on. And BZ was right there in the forefront of a lot of that, too. But what there wasn't at the time was breaking news coverage. The wire services, which were the creation of the newspapers, would not supply wire service copy to radio stations at the time. Nobody, the technology wasn't there anyway to send reporters out into the field. You know, Don Batting was just a kid back then. the technology just wasn't there to send reporters out into the field and collect audio and bring it back. You couldn't do that yet. You had some coverage of live events as they were happening, presidential addresses, inaugurations, that sort of thing.
All right,
actual news.
We're talking with Scott Feibusch, and he's a radio historian and a former staffer here at WBZ, broadcaster up in Rochester, New York these days, and the guy behind Northeast Radio Watch and the Tower Site calendar. I got the one for 2012 in my hands right now. We're going to continue with Scott in just a couple of minutes here. Here's CBS News on WBZ.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Sharon Middleman. Four in a row for Mad Men.
And the Emmy goes to Mad Men.
The series picked up the Emmy Sunday night for Outstanding Drama Series, tying the record for consecutive wins set by Hill Street Blues and West Wing.
I did not think that was going to happen.
Mad Men creator Matthew Weiner.
We want to thank the fans of the show who support it so wholeheartedly, wherever it goes and whatever happens on it.
CBS's Steve Futterman is at the Emmys.
One award that was expected to go to the star of Mad Men instead turned out to be the big upset of the night. Mad Men's Jon Hamm did not win Best Actor in a Drama Series. Instead, the award went to Kyle Chandler for his role in Friday Night Lights, a show that's no longer on the air. In the numbers competition, Modern Family was the big winner. It took home five Emmys, including for a second straight year, Best Comedy Series.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Sharon Middleman.
Here come the lottery numbers. The Mass Evening, 0603. 0603 is the Mass Evening number. Mass Cash, 6, 9, 13, 16, 22. Tri-State Evenings, the Pick 3, 659. The Pick 4, 9764. Try the Pick 4 again, 9764. In sports, Patriots over the Chargers, 35-24. Brady throws for 423 yards. Rays beat the Red Sox 9-5. They're within two games, the Rays, of the Red Sox in the wild card race. And the extended WBZ Yankee weather forecast, mainly clear and breezy overnight. Low temperature 51 in town, 45 well inland. Sunny to partly cloudy during the day with a high of just 64. Partly cloudy Monday night, the low 53. Tuesday, clouds, some sun, a shower around, the high 68. Partly sunny and warmer on Wednesday with a high of 73. We've got 49 degrees in Boston right now at WBZ.
Bazaar Gourmet Stores invite you to add some excitement and flavor to your next dinner or party. In these popular European...
If you're shopping for a mortgage, you should ask for more than just a great rate. Just ask Middlesex mortgage expert John Auger.
At Middlesex, we offer loans that are unique to us because we're lending our money, we're holding on to that loan, we're servicing that loan after the fact. Rate is obviously important. We always offer very competitive rates. One of the things that truly sets us apart from most lenders is that we don't charge more for larger loan amounts. We have the same pricing whether the loan is $200,000 or $1 million. You have to understand what's important to that customer, what their goals are, what they're trying to achieve by this loan. It's all about doing what's best for that customer. These are people that are going to recommend us to their friends. And if we're looking out for their best long-term interests, for their financial well-being, that's our mission. That's what we exist to do.
A great rate is just the beginning. Apply online at MiddlesexBank.com/mortgage. Middlesex Savings Bank, where you're worth more. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Got your hands full? Good thing all you need is one finger to make dinner at NotYourAverageJoes.com. You click, our chefs cook real made-to-order food from scratch. It's not your average takeout, but then we're not your average Joes.
All right, calm down. Tonight, it's the season premiere of How I Met Your Mother, followed by the premiere of the new 2.5 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I know, the excitement has been building all summer, but you have to relax. We're talking comedy history. Who isn't dying to find out what's going to happen? Wait, calm down. Then the executive producer of Sex and the City brings you TV's most anticipated new comedy, Two Broke Girls. Breathe. Premiere Monday, tonight, only CBS.
I'm okay.
Turn on that radio.
From WBZ News, here is a special report.
WBZ.
A state which will live
Japan
in infamy.
Accept surrender.
McCarthy is.
You interrupt this program.
He's being on media.
WBZ Radio.
Resign the presidency of
skies over Baghdad.
Princess Diana.
The second explosion.
None of us will ever forget this day.
We'll win this war on terror.
Osama bin Laden was killed.
The challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our life.
WBZ.
90 years of broadcasting.
We broadcast news.
WBZ News Radio 1030.
Every day. 888-WBZ-1030 puts you in touch with Steve LaValle. That's 888-929-1030.
We'll take some calls in a little bit. You can call those numbers now and hold on. We'll go to the phones in a bit. But we're talking with Scott Feibusch, radio historian, former WBZ staffer, and now on the air up in Rochester, New York. He's joining us here in the studio. He's also the guy behind Northeast Radio Watch. How long have you been doing that, Northeast Radio Watch and its predecessors?
17 years, remarkably enough. I started when I was working here in the mid-90s, and it evolved from New England Radio Watch into Northeast Radio Watch. Every week I chronicle what's going on in this crazy business and who's coming and who's going and who's coming back in some cases.
Yeah, I've been in there a few times over the years.
That was one of the stories. That was one of the stories I liked being able to write. That was a good one.
I like it when a couple times I've made your year-end rant in a positive way. So I've really enjoyed that. Thank you very much for that.
As I was saying during the break, this is one of the stations. I still keep a 10:30 button on my radio. In Rochester, because this, you know, the station sounds like Boston, and you travel around a lot. There are a lot of stations that don't sound like where they are anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It still sounds like Boston.
Too many places, the program could be coming from Venezuela or from Mars. It could be coming from anywhere. It's like, it doesn't matter where it's from. There's no there,
exactly.
In a sense. You need to have some contact with the city that your listener is in, or either they live in it too, or they relate to it because they live nearby or they've been there. There's got to be some way that you bring it to them, and syndicated shows, network shows. It really depends upon how you do them, but for the most part, the way they're done, it doesn't really work.
I can't call a radio show in Rochester and commiserate about the Red Sox. I could. They wouldn't listen.
Well, right. But yeah, that's the thing. Most of the places on the... There's not as many jobs in this business as there used to be because most of the shows, most of the stations are carrying the same show at a given moment. So
this is true.
Now, what would be the golden era? Was there a golden era or maybe more than one of WBEZ?
That's one of the neat things. The station has had a bunch of golden eras. You know, there is the so-called golden age of radio in the 30s and 40s. And interestingly, that was a time when radio wasn't so local. You know, we were hooked up, in this case, right, with the NBC network back then, and we broadcast mostly NBC programming out of New York and then later out of the West Coast. And then in the 1950s, Westinghouse did a very daring thing at the time. They disaffiliated their big stations from the network, went independent, and started playing rock music.
Mm.
And so WBZ went through a whole other era in the 50s and 60s and into the early 70s as a major important top 40 voice. And you had guys like Bruce Bradley playing the hits. And then it reinvented itself again, doing talk radio and doing full service radio. Guys like Dave Mader and then Carl D'Souza just survived through all these eras.
Yeah.
And then I came around just as we were turning that corner again into all news radio. And I remember being here the day we finally got rid of the talk shows in the middle of the day. And went, it was some guy named Bergeron. I don't know whatever became of him, but
he made out okay.
I guess so. And we went all news in the middle of the day, and that was a big deal to be doing all news again here. And boy, look at that. I mean, in some ways, this once again really is another golden age in this radio station's history. It's had so many lives over the years.
Now, news itself, we were talking earlier, you didn't really hear it. Aside from special coverage, like an election or something, you didn't really hear much news coverage on radio in the early days. Back in the late 70s, I was at WEEI, and I produced a special on Boston radio in the 40s and 50s. And one of the people that we interviewed was Arch McDonald, who worked here at WBZ Radio and also at Channel 4 for many, many years. And he talked about he was the first radio reporter in Boston who covered the State House on a regular basis. There were newspaper people up there. There were wire service people up there. But he was the first radio guy. And in fact, he told a great story to us for that program that when he would call in a story to the station that had not come over the wire yet, the people back here at the station were not interested in that. They just want what the wire had. So he thought, well, then what am I doing here? So he pulled a little trick on them. He would get his story, and then he would call the wire service and give them two paragraphs of his story. And then he'd go to his desk, and he'd write the radio version. And by the time he called into the station, the wire had spit out the first two paragraphs, and they'd say, hey, do you have the such and such story? I got it right here. But it was a little bit of a struggle to get news on the air. As I mentioned, the newspapers didn't want that because they were afraid radio could put them out of business. And then you mentioned about the wire services. Obviously, their clients originally were the newspapers.
Yeah,
so
the
they weren't going to share
calculated.
That. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about
the
that
newspapers,
war.
You had these wars where newspapers would stop printing radio station program listings at a time when that was the only way to find out what was going to be on the radio that night, and it mattered. And so if you were the station that was broadcasting news before the newspaper had it, and all of a sudden the newspaper stopped listing your programs, that became a problem for you. And they stopped mentioning you in their radio columns. You'd have alliances that would pop up between newspapers and radio stations. This city was a little unusual. You know, there are a lot of cities where the newspaper owned the radio station.
Yes.
That never really happened so much here. I guess the Boston Post at one point had some affiliation with one of the stations in town. But there was never a Boston Globe radio station, for instance, back in those days. So you didn't have that so much. But eventually, you know, after World War II really was what really broke it open. You know, it became clear you couldn't hold this force back. If you were going to be getting live reporting from the likes of Edward R. Murrow, it was something the newspapers couldn't do, and they knew it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the start, in some ways, of the whole transition of what a newspaper is that's continued even to this day.
Right.
You know, radio was sort of the original internet that challenged the newspapers in a way.
And, of course, obviously that changed radio, too, as more regularly scheduled news programs were on the radio, as well as the special coverage, which had been on. Then radio became a regular source of news for people, and in some cases a regular source of a particular type of news, like sports news or financial news or the weather, you know, whatever it might be. These were features that people recognize today, but at one time, these were brand new things. These were things that you couldn't hear before. So I suppose, you know, there was a little, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is great. They're telling me what I'm going to read in the paper tomorrow.
There was even shopping news. There was a station in Boston in the late 1920s, WASN, All Shopping News. I kid you not. And again, when Donna Halper is here tomorrow night, she knows all about WASN too. That was actually, I think, staffed predominantly by women, which was extremely unusual in that era. And it existed to tell you what was for sale in the Boston department stores. I think in particular in the Shepherd's stores because they owned it.
Sure, yeah.
So even the infomercial is not as new as we think it is.
When you go through it, I know you have done this over the years, some of the big names. Now, I can think of big names on this station going back into the 60s that I actually remember hearing. And then I've heard people talk about names on this station from the 50s. But if we go back further than that, who are the big guns, the big names that people would have listened to every day, that people would have talked about, people that had careers that other broadcasters would say, well, he's one of the best. Who were some of those big names from the early days?
That's more a Donna question.
Oh yeah,
Donna's the expert on that. But you had right. there were folks like Streeter Stewart who went back here, I believe, as far as the 1940s,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken. You know, Streeter was one of the first real Boston radio news people. Arch McDonald,
yeah,
who you've mentioned came out of here, and then the 60s, boy, you know, to be a disc jockey on WBZ,
yeah.
In the 1960s, wow, yeah, that was a big deal. Guys like Alan Derry, who just died not all that long ago, I think just within the past year, as a matter of fact. Jefferson Kay.
Dick Summer,
who's still alive and well and kicking in Philadelphia.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Rochester, New York.
Oh, you're from Rochester originally?
I'm from Rochester originally, came here to go to school at Brandeis, and lucked into a position here right out of college after some time up in Lowell.
Now, I got to figure, since I was doing the same thing of spinning the dial in the middle of the night to seeing what I could pull in from other parts of the country, and I was growing up here in the Boston area, you must have been doing that same thing. Of course, you got the flamethrower up there, WHAM, with a big signal. But you must have been doing that same thing, and you must have picked this station up a few times.
Oh, I listened to this station a lot of times. I knew 1170 Soldiers Field Road long before I ever came to work.
And who did you listen to? I've been asking this question last week in the middle of the show every night. We did an hour or two about who was the person that brought you to WBZ, the first favorite WBZ personality you had, whether it was a disc jockey, talk show host, news person, weather forecaster, maybe sportscaster. Who was it for you?
We just went 46 minutes without invoking the name Larry Glick.
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting there.
So there's a name for you right there. That's I'm well aware of that. There are, you know, the number of people who were influenced by Larry, and then to have the opportunity to come here and walk in early in the morning and have Norm Nathan sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, how can you beat that?
Yeah.
You can't. I'm here to tell you right now, you can't. And then, you know, then to get to work with David Brudnoy.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a guessing game. The guy that I'm here with tonight, Garrett Woolman, runs a mailing list all about Boston radio, and we've had all kinds of speculation kicking around the last couple of days. Who's going to be that fourth plaque on the Wall of Fame?
Oh, yeah.
Outside the building here when they do that tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Going up there with LaPierre and Santos and Maynard.
Right. Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing because, I mean, there might be a rumor around the station, but I haven't heard anything, so no one talks to me because they figure I'll just say it on the air.
I tried to get Peter to spill the beans, and he wasn't.
Did you? All right, we are going to take some calls for Scott when we come back from this break. 617-254-1030 is the number, and I wanted to kind of set the scene and talk about the station in the wicked old days that most of us can't remember, which we've done. We'll take your phone calls on WBZ and on radio. As I continue to ask Scott questions in between your calls, we are going to talk about some more recent things. Going back, I guess, probably as far as the 60s, and up to more recent, even very recent times, because there's been a lot happening at this station, and there's been a lot of famous people who have worked here. They worked here for a while, and that's how they became famous. Some of them went on to do other things, and some of them made a career right here. And some of those voices you still hear from time to time. 617-254-1030 is the number. And I believe you can still call 617-254-5678. I'm pretty sure that still rings right to the 1030 number. You might remember that number from the Jerry Williams Show from 8 to midnight on WBZ in the 60s and 70s.
I should have brought those jingles in. I've got those jingles.
Oh, my gosh.
254-5678.
Of course, I remember on this show, and Glick didn't even remember this when I brought this up, but Kenny Meyer called in to confirm that I was correct. Glick's original number was 254-5689.
Really?
And at the same time that Williams was using 5678, and Larry was saying 254-5689. Now, that number still rings somewhere here in the building. So if you want to leave a message for someone, I have no idea who it is, tell them Steve sent you. We'll be right back.
888-WBZ-1030 puts you in touch with Steve LaValle. The Steve LaValle Broadcast on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Would you like to instantly watch cinema movies on your computer? Now you can with our limited time free trial. Click on your radio banner now and check out the new generation of online movie entertainment. You can easily turn your computer into a powerful cinema center in less than 10 seconds. No download or installation required. Click on your radio banner now and find your favorite movies, TV shows, and much more. Start watching instantly with this limited time offer. Click on your radio banner now, sign up for free, and start watching.
Search engines and directories can be great for helping people find your business, if you don't mind being surrounded by your competition when the results are displayed. On the other hand, internet radio showcases your business and yours alone for 15, 30, or 60 seconds, making an emotional connection with your target audience. If you want to separate your business from the competition when you connect with consumers, try advertising on internet radio with TargetSpot. To get started, go to TargetSpot.com.
Calm down. Tonight, it's the season premiere of How I Met Your Mother, followed by the premiere of the new 2.5 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I know, the excitement has been building all summer, but you have to relax. We're talking comedy history. Who isn't dying to find out what's going to happen? Wait, calm down. Then the executive producer of Sex and the City brings you TV's most anticipated new comedy, Two Broke Girls. Breathe. Premiere Monday, tonight, only CBS.
I'm okay.
Football season is here, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to tailgate. Visit tailgatefan.com. Choose your location, invite your friends, and party hard. A tailgate can happen anywhere, but all great tailgates start at tailgatefan.com.
Planning documents are in place to ensure that your wishes are carried out.
Have you thought about what you want to do when you retire? Retirement may be the longest phase of your life. What steps are you taking today to plan for that phase?
Some things in life are so important, but you get only one chance to get them right. Every day, thousands of families face a crisis for which they are unprepared, a crisis that often tears families apart.
We can help.
Our firm is an expert in Caring Law. Our dedicated staff has hundreds of years of combined experience.
Let our family help your family.
Call the law offices of Stephen Spano and Francine DeWicke at 781-231-7800. On the web at caringlaw.com.
Visit CBSBoston.com to check out CBS Local Offers. CBS Local Offers saves you money every day. Get deals to the finest restaurants, spas, and stores all over Boston. Whether you want to try a new place for dinner or you want to get a relaxing massage, CBS Local Offers has it all. Every day, you'll find a new deal to the greatest places in Boston. Subscribe to the daily email to get the offers delivered right to you. Remember, for the greatest deals in Boston, visit CBSBoston.com.
Here's the toll-free number to talk to Steve. 888-WBZ-1030. That's 888-929-1030.
And a local number is 617-254-1030. Radio historian Scott Feibusch is our guest, and he'll be with us in the next hour, too. And who knows after that? Let's take some calls. Let's go to the car. Gail, you're on WBZ. Hi there, Gail.
Yes, hi, Steve. It's Gail. And I want to say hello to your guest. I didn't catch his first name.
That's Scott.
Hi, Gail.
Scott. Hi, Scott. Scott, my father's 94 years old, and I consider him the best historian that I know. And we only could listen to BZ and watch Channel 4 when we were growing up and read the Boston Globe. So so my question is, when did the radio station start recording news that was in the Boston Globe or on Channel 4 TV?
Well, Channel
when did the talk shows begin? The talk hosts start beginning to question people about current events that they saw either in the on television or in the newspapers. When did that start?
The talk shows really started here in the 60s. Jerry Williams was another one of those legendary names that came through here.
Yeah.
And he was really, I think, the first one here in the mid to late 1960s. There's a great book about Jerry called Burning Up the Air that came out a couple of years ago that goes into a lot of detail about the early years of talk radio and how it started out. But that was a big deal at that point to be controversial like that and to challenge authority. The TV station, as far as reporting news from TV came on in 1948. There's a great story about Arch MacDonald sitting on some sort of a milk can in the studio because they didn't have any kind of a chair for him yet to deliver the news. There were stations, as early as the 20s and 30s, there were arrangements with newspapers to read some of the news out of the newspaper, but you couldn't read it till after it had been published.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that people wouldn't go out and not buy the newspaper because they'd already heard it on the radio. It took until World War II, until the 40s, to start getting news on the radio that hadn't already been in print somewhere. And of course, it was a different era in print because he had newspapers coming out all day long. There was an evening edition of The Globe and The Traveler and so on and so forth.
All right. Thank you, Gail. Thank you very much. And with the talk shows, although Jerry Williams probably put us on the map as far as being a station that had talk shows in the evening, he was preceded here by Bob Kennedy.
Yes, he was.
Who
Contact.
Did Contact from 10 to midnight. And that would have started in the early 60s. I don't know what year exactly, but somewhere around 1962. Now, whether we had a call-in show prior to that, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think there was the technology to do it between the delays and the... Telephone interfaces didn't really exist at the time the way it did. It was really the 60s, and I think Jerry who really started that happening.
And Jerry was on 8 to midnight, and he would take the Boston Globe, and he would, in the first half hour of his show from 8 to 8:30, he would discuss all by himself each story that was on the front page of the paper. And then whatever the lead story was on the front of the Metro section and possibly the financial section if it was something that he thought merited mentioning. But basically, he did the front page of the Globe, and he would just go over it himself. There'd be one break, so you'd have the five-minute newscast at the top of the hour, and then approximately 25 minutes of Jerry with one commercial break in there, just going through the day's newspaper, and then he would start taking calls at 8:30, or maybe he would have a guest at 8:30, and just listening to him read the headlines, read the first couple of sentences of a story, and then comment on it. He was just so great at that. It was, even if you were not going to listen to the rest of the show and you just wanted to hear Jerry's version of the Boston Globe, it was a great thing to listen to. I don't know if you can remember that, but
he was. I don't go back quite that far.
Yeah.
I
mean,
he was. I remember him later on, and he was definitely a master at that, and that established a form. I mean, there are still talk hosts who do that. You listen to, where does Rush Limbaugh get the first hour of his show from?
Right.
He's
right.
Pontificating on the headlines.
He doesn't take any calls until second segment of the second hour.
That's straight from Jerry.
Yeah, a lot of it got started here, and then the competition eventually here of talk radio. WEI became an all-talk station at one point. This is going back to the 60s. Paul Benziquin, who worked here, I first heard him over there. And as time went on, some of the smaller stations tried some talk
MEX
shows.
MEX was in and out of it from time to time when Jerry was over
Good
there.
Good example. Yeah. And then when they became WITS, and then WHDH eventually with some talk shows, and then almost all talk shows. And I guess eventually, maybe at the very end, they were all talk. I can't remember exactly.
They were trying a bunch of things at
the
end.
Yeah, they were trying a lot of stuff at that point.
There was all news there for a little while.
Yeah, but they the competition really made talk shows as popular as they became. It was a very good and healthy thing. It meant more jobs and more talk shows on more stations, and the lack of competition. And as a matter of fact, a company owning too many stations in the same market kind of sends the competition away. That's my opinion about that kind of thing, but CBS didn't ask me. Scott Feibusch is our guest, and we're going to take a lot of calls in the next hour. So everybody hold on. We're going to go right to the phones when we come back, and we'll be talking with Scott and talking with you. 617-254-1030 is the number. Mark Lovallo is off tonight. Vanessa Pruitt is filling in for Mark, and she's at the controls. Tomorrow night in this hour, we'll be talking with another radio historian and friend of the broadcast, Donna Halper. And we'll talk with Donna about the early days of WBEZ as well as later days, and talk about a book that she had come out, I think it was earlier this year, that you might want to get a copy of because it's very interesting. And we're also going to talk with Scott next hour about all of the things that he does that you might want to check out. So we'll continue with Scott Feibusch in just a few minutes here, right after the 1 o'clock news on the Steve Lavelli broadcast on WBEZ.
And we are back at the F1 Boston Grand Prix, where Susie from accounting continues her dominant lead. But closing fast is Jerry from HR.
Bob.
And we have a three-way fight for third between sales, IT, and what's the intern's name again?
Bob.
Craig, that's it. Craig at number 44 is tucked in behind it. Oh, Susie is spun out and falls back to second, and it's a fight for first going into turn four.
Bob.
They're closing in. It's neck and neck. We have not seen anyone race this fast through Boston since Paul Revere.
Yeah.
What?
You'll get your turn.
Aw.
F1 Boston is the meeting and team-building place for you and your business. With European-style racing cars, conference and event rooms, and incredible food, you have everything you need to make your next event fun and successful. Get your business on the fast track now. Call us at 781-228-2010 or log on to f1boston.com.
Make your fall meeting successful, fun, and affordable. Contact F1 Boston at 781-228-2010 or visit now f1boston.com.
WBZ, WBZ HD, WBZ FM HD3, Boston, a CBS radio station.
New England's News Watch never stops on WBZ News Radio.
CBS News, I'm Sharon Middleman. Mad Men ties a record at the Emmys, winning Outstanding Drama for the fourth year in a row. Creator Matthew Weiner.
We want to thank the fans of the show who support it so wholeheartedly, wherever it goes and whatever happens on it.
And winner of Outstanding Comedy Series, Modern Family. Melissa McCarthy took home the Emmy for Best Actress in a Comedy Series, Mike and Molly.
Anybody I forgot, I just want to say thank you. Holy smokes!
And joining us live now from the Emmys in Los Angeles, CBS's Steve Futterman.
Well, Sharon, the top two winners from last year turned out to be the top two winners this year. Mad Men and Modern Family took home those top two Emmys, Best Drama and Best Comedy Series. Now, there were some fresh faces in the acting awards. Julianna Margulies won Best Actress in the Drama Series for The Good Wife, the first time she has won for that program. The big upset of the night, though, came when Kyle Chandler, one of the stars of Friday Night Lights, won Best Actor in a Drama Series. He was so surprised, he said, he didn't even bother writing an acceptance speech. Live at the Emmy Awards in Los Angeles, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Investigators in Reno, Nevada are hoping video they're finding at an airplane crash scene will help them figure out what went wrong. A vintage plane crashed Friday at the Reno Air Race, killing 9 people. Mark Rosekind of the National Transportation Safety Board.
There was a camera identified, video camera. Fragments were found. Memory cards have been identified. All of those will be going to the Research and Engineering Laboratory in D.C. to determine if they actually have any video images from the accident aircraft.
In Yemen, at least 12 people have been killed after government troops opened fire on anti-government protesters. Tom Finn in Sana'a with Al Jazeera English TV.
In the corner of the mosque, there are corpses laid out underneath a white cloth, and most of them have been shot in the head. Their names are written on pieces of paper on their chest. And I've been looking at the date of birth, and most of them are under the age of 22.
Well, protesters have been demanding the removal of President Ali Abdullah Saleh for more than 7 months. What's the best way to get teenagers to quit smoking? Well, it's exercise. That's what a new study by the American Academy of Pediatrics says. Kimberly Horn is a professor of community medicine at West Virginia University. She's the principal author of the study.
The kids who received the physical activity boost had a 2 times lowered risk of continued smoking.
The re-release of The Lion King tops the box office this weekend. The movie, now in 3D, took in $29 million in its opening weekend. The original film made more than $40 million when it opened nationwide 17 years ago. This is CBS News.
WBZ News Time is 103. We check traffic on the threes with the Subaru dealers of New England all-wheel drive traffic on the threes.
This report brought to us by Sig Alert. Downtown right now, northbound through the O'Neill. The right lanes are taken through the O'Neill Tunnel and up through the Zakim. Lower deck southbound, right lanes are closed from the Sturo ramp to the O'Neill Tunnel entrance. Westbound Sturo Drive, the Leverett Tunnel is closed. City Square Tunnel southbound shut down. All traffic off at Rutherford Ave and on the Pike eastbound exit 22 to Copley Square is shut down. South of the city on the expressway north, right lanes are taken from Mass Ave up into the O'Neill. 128, you're doing okay from Newton to Braintree. 24 and 95 are fine from 128 to the Rhode Island line, and Route 3 looks good all along the South Shore. North of town, 128 north, 2 right lanes are taken, passing Route 3 in Burlington. On 93 south, a left lane is taken, Dascombe Road to 125, while northbound, 2 left lanes are closed, Medford Square to Winchester Highlands. West of the city on 128 north, the 2 right lanes are closed between Route 20 and Winter Street in Waltham. And on 128 south in Lexington, 2 right lanes are closed, starting at 4 and 225. Northbound on 495, 2 right lanes are taken from Route 9 to Cimarron Drive, southbound, 2 left lanes are closed in that same stretch. Greg Vine, WBZ's 24-hour traffic network.
Rush hour is brutal. We can help. Before you get on the road, log on to CBSBoston.com. You'll see real-time traffic jams, accident reports, and exact speeds along your commute. Sign up for free alerts sent directly to your mobile phone or PDA. That's CBSBoston.com.
All right, calm down. Tonight, it's the season premiere of How I Met Your Mother, followed by the premiere of the new 2 1/2 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I know, the excitement has been building all summer, but you have to relax. We're talking comedy history. Who isn't dying to find out what's going to happen? Wait, calm down. Then the executive producer of Sex and the City brings you TV's most anticipated new comedy, Two Broke Girls. Breathe. Premiere Monday, tonight, only CBS.
I'm okay.
I'm Mina Green, WBZ News. If you see low-flying helicopters over Western Massachusetts Monday, police are telling people not to be alarmed. Western Mass Electric will be conducting aerial vegetation surveys of its rights of way. The chopper will be seen in Springfield, Longmeadow, Greenfield, and Chicopee. The Connecticut River Watershed Council is looking for volunteers for an annual effort to remove trash from shorelines in New England. The group says Tropical Storm Irene created a bit more of a mess this year. The council is urging groups and individuals to register by Monday so that they can be supplied with bags and gloves. For the past 14 years, thousands of volunteers have removed more than 650 tons of refuse along waterways. The Massachusetts Senate is preparing to debate its own version of a gambling bill that would license 3 casinos and slots parlors in the state. Senate lawmakers have until Wednesday to file amendments to the bill. That's similar to the gaming bill passed last week by the House. Plans for a protest are set for Monday. Environmental activists are saying the Patrick administration is backing away from a 2010 promise to beef up regulations governing wood-burning energy facilities in the Bay State. The protest will be held at the State House. Wood power advocates have fought efficiency standards, calling them arbitrary and unscientific. Now the extended WBZ AccuWeather forecast.
A bit of a breeze before daybreak, mostly clear, down to 45 in some of the cooler suburbs, 51 in the city. And for the day on Monday, sunny to partly cloudy, high 64. Patchy clouds Monday night, low 53. Cloudy to partly sunny Tuesday. Shower possible, high 68. Wednesday, warmer, some sunshine, high up to 73. I'm AccuWeather meteorologist John Fierick, WBZ News Radio 1030.
Welcome back to the Steve Lavelli broadcast from WBEZ in Boston, where it's 49 degrees at 8 minutes after 1. 617-254-1030 is your number, toll-free. It's 888-WBEZ-1030, 888-929-1030. And our guest, as in the first hour, radio historian Scott Feibusch, the guy behind Northeast Radio Watch, broadcaster up in the Rochester, New York market, and formerly on the staff at WBZ News, and the guy behind Feibusch.com. Go check that out if you're interested in radio at all, no matter what you're interested in, the technical side or any other side of it. Go to Feibusch.com, and there will be something of interest for you, believe me. For people who don't know what Northeast Radio Watch is, give them, you did this last hour, but give them a little synopsis of what they would find if they went to Feibusch.com and then followed Northeast Radio Watch.
Yeah, it's a weekly synopsis of what's going on in radio and TV and programming and engineering and personnel and who's coming and who's going and what's signing on.
And aside from knowing the
what's changing call letters.
What other states are in there in Northeast?
All of New England. And then when I moved out of here and back to Rochester, I added New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and even parts of Eastern Canada.
So anybody in those markets or in those states or anybody who cares about those states will find something interesting in there.
I was amazed at the readers who have moved out of the region and still want to keep track
absolutely
of where their old buddies are working.
Joe Matthew, who is our morning news guy, who's from the Boston area and has worked in Washington for the last bunch of years until coming home to WBZ, he was all excited when I told him I was having you on. He wants to meet you. He's been reading you for years.
I will, if I don't catch him at the end of the show today, I will.
I can see that happening. And the Tower Site calendar for 2012, I have in my hands, and some people out there are jealous because they know what it is. You got one already? They're just hot off the presses. This one actually is still warm, ladies and gentlemen.
You're one of about the first 10 people in America to get one of these.
That's pretty cool. And this Tower Site calendar, it's exactly what you think it is. It's pictures of radio towers around the country. Some of them are in big cities. Some of them are in the middle of nowhere. How'd you start doing it? You've been doing this for a long time, too. 10 years?
I grew up surrounded by radio towers. I had towers in my backyard. I had towers in my front yard in Rochester growing up. And I became fascinated by them. You know, people will say, oh, they all look the same. Well, they don't. There are actually a lot of variations in how they're built and where they're built and why they're built where they're built. And I started traveling around taking pictures of them, trying to document them. You know, some of them were in danger of being torn down. We've got to talk about the original WBZ towers.
Oh, yes, yes.
And somebody suggested about 10 years ago, I was working at a TV station in Rochester, and somebody said, you got all these pictures. You ought to make a calendar out of them. And I went down to a print shop and just had, I think, about 100 of them made up and put them on the website. Lo and behold, people wanted them. Next thing you know, I had something. Who knew?
Yeah, right.
Who knew? So this has been coming out, and this is actually the 11th edition this year.
Cool.
Believe it or not. It's got towers not only from all over the U.S. this year, but even one from Ireland.
Oh, no kidding, yeah.
I was over there in March for a family wedding. I stopped at a tower site and got a picture of the original 1930s medium-wave broadcast facility.
Nice.
Athlone, Ireland.
So all of you radio heads out there, go to Feibusch.com and get more information on this and check out the tower site calendar if you don't already know about it, which I'll bet you do. We're going to go right to the phones here and get some folks on the air with questions for Scott Feibusch. Let's go to Rhode Island. Denny, you're on WBZ.
Hi,
guys. Hi there.
Really, really great program tonight.
Thanks.
And I'd just like to make one comment, if I might at first, and that is I write and illustrate classic car books, and I write them in the present tense, and I just finished my 34 book, and it's called Going Hollywood. And the thing I noticed about three mediums, the movies, radio, and records, during the Depression, you know, people had no money. And I think that was the golden age of the radios, because I've researched this book very thoroughly that I'm doing. And interestingly enough, the top 10 vocalists, male and female, in 1934 were all movie stars. And they were either Bing Crosby, who started out as a vocalist and ended up as a movie star. And And it just changed our sense of celebrity, because before radio, it was the 400s people. And then after that, it was the people who came from humble beginnings who became the major stars. Just like Ginger Rogers and Irene Dunne, all these people came from nowhere and became the new celebrities. And it kind of makes sense that radio was the leader, because people had no money, and the movies were smart enough to have these movie stars advertise their new movies on the radio and even read part of the script.
It was a great synergy. It gave, you know, you're right, it gave the studios a chance to promote that, what they were doing. It was an easy way for the networks to get talent to put on their airwaves, and it wasn't a threat the way TV became a threat to the movie theaters.
Exactly. Right. And Radio Corporation of America, remember Bluebird Records? I mean, they made their, they got smart. They made records, and one thing,
RKO Radio Pictures.
If I could share just one thing, my mom's 91 years old, and she says during Depression, she lived in Philly, records cost 75 cents. That's a fortune then. 15 kids on the block would chip in a nickel, and they get down and get the latest Russ Colombo or Bing Crosby or Ginger Rogers record, and they would play it on the phonograph on the stoop. I just thought that was kind of cool.
All right, Denny, thank you very much. But then they could turn on the radio and hear some of those same people for free. And that's true. It brought the big stars into people's homes.
And performing live, because the classy stations didn't play records then.
Right, right. That's another thing. Around what time did playing recordings become popular? Because at one point it was all live.
It started to happen in the 30s to a certain extent. You had WNEW in New York, the Milkman's Matinee.
It goes back that far?
Yeah. But the idea was still, it was a big deal in 1956 when Westinghouse separated its stations from the NBC network and started playing music and doing DJ shows. The idea that stations like WBZ would do that, that was a big deal.
And obviously it was happening around the time that rock and roll was happening. A lot of today's radio, not so much this station, but a lot of today's radio has to do with the advent of rock, and has to do with the popularity and the mainstreaming of music that at first didn't get a lot of radio play. It took a little while for that. Not too long, but it took a little while. It didn't immediately hit the airwaves in a big way. We hear about Alan Freed, and we hear about people who changed radio because they were putting on the air music that either most stations weren't running or most of the day the station wasn't running it.
But they were doing it in the most part in most of these cities on small, offbeat little radio stations that were off the beaten path. So again, the idea that the 50,000-watt giant voice of New England would do this, and would do it in a fairly adventurous way. I mean, they were playing, you had Hootenanny going on the weekends, you had folk music being played here. There was stuff going on this radio station that in retrospect looks pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
From 40 or 50 years on.
All right. We'll continue with Scott Feibusch and with your phone calls in just a couple of minutes here on WBZ.
Here now is this week's Car Tech Minute from CNET.com.
Ready to loan your car to a stranger? I'm Brian Cooley on Cars from CNET. The latest micro rage in the intersection of cars and tech is private car loan. The idea is that you offer your car into a pool where others can use it and you can use theirs. For example, at a service called GetAround, the average fee is $8 an hour to use a car, plus gas. But insurance is included for the owner, who gets about 60% of that fee. You can find an available car via an app. The car might even have a device on it that lets you access the car with your smartphone instead of having to meet the owner to get the keys. Now, GetAround says most of our cars sit idle about 92% of the time. Sounds about right. But for most American drivers who feel their car is a very personal possession, putting it into one of these services is probably a stretch. I'm Brian Cooley on Cars from CNET.
Hey, football fans, do you love tailgating? Sure you do. Well, check out tailgatefan.com, the definitive destination for planning the ultimate football get-together. It's simple. Choose your location, invite your friends, and party hard. TailgateFan makes it easy to list party favors and snacks, and even lets you share pictures with your friends and family. A tailgate can happen anywhere, but all great tailgates start at tailgatefan.com.
I'm former Major League relief pitcher Goose Gossage, here to make my most important pitch ever. Join the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and help us protect millions of acres of North America's wildlife habitat.
Visit elkfoundation.org or call 1-800-CALL-ELK.
CBS Local Offers. CBS Local Offers saves you money every day. Get deals to the finest restaurants, spas, and stores all over Boston. Whether you want to try a new place for dinner or you want to get a relaxing massage, CBS Local Offers has it all. Every day, you'll find a new deal to the greatest places in Boston. Subscribe to the daily email to get the offers delivered right to you. Remember, for the greatest deals in Boston, visit cbsboston.com.
Don't just sit there. Steve wants to hear from you. Call 617-254-1030. The Steve Mazzelli Broadcast on WBZ News Radio 1030.
18 minutes after 1. Let's go to Sharon Lee. You're on WBZ along with Scott Feibusch.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
And I have in front of me an original postcard. Radio station WBZ, 800 kilocycles, dash, 337 meters, Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company.
Ooh.
Of Springfield, Mass. It shows on one side Hotel Kimball Studio.
Mm-hmm.
On the right-hand side are three announcers. You probably don't go back to that. But WST is initials of one announcer, MCN another, and AED. Apparently what they did when people wanted information, they sent out thank you notes.
Because
we wish to thank you for your communication concerning your reception of a program broadcast from WBZ.
Wow. Sounds like a QSL card.
Future programs, and also your suggestions for the improvement of our service will always be appreciated.
Now, do you know what year that's from, Lee?
Well, I think it's older than I am, and that's kind of old.
That sounds to me like it has to have been from the early 1920s, and I'll tell you why. Because initially, they weren't sure they wanted to identify announcers by name.
Uh-huh.
And so the first announcers were identified by initials. I think so that the announcers wouldn't get all famous and get swelled heads.
And they wouldn't have to pay them too much.
Ask SL over here.
You know, what else is interesting? On the other side, it was the station's WBZ schedule for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Started at 12:55.
Mm-hmm.
It was time signals, weather, and market reports. 6:03 was dinner concert. 7 p.m. was baseball scores. Now, that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
7:05 was addresses and market reports. Why I'm reading this, because they were only on for a short time of the day.
Right.
7:30 was Kitty Twilight Tales. 7:40 was musical programs, except Friday. And 10:55, Arlington time signals of the official weather forecast.
I would bet that sounds like it probably dates to about 1924 or maybe 1925.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
That early on.
And it was only on until 7:30 in the evening.
Now, how do you have that, Lee?
Oh, I'm a collector of postcards, and I belong to the Sharon Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
So when we traveled up the East Coast, my husband and I would go through all the postcards. And when I came across this postcard, I got so excited. I've had it for years, but I never had the opportunity, and I'm so happy that I could be part of this program.
Well, I thank you very much for calling in.
I'm just wondering if I made a copy of this, could I send it to Steve?
That'd be great. I would love to have that.
Back?
And I'll send Scott a copy. I would love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care. Let's go up to Lowell. Bob, you're on WBZ.
Good evening.
Hi there.
Hi, Bob.
Thank you for taking the call. Scott, I remember meeting you. You worked at WCAP.
I was afraid somebody would remember that era.
as soon as
Steve said Lowell.
A bank robbery. And I didn't know a robbery had taken place, and I was heading for the bank. That's how I happened to meet you.
I had
to stay outside and wait while the police were doing their work.
I was just a kid then. I was actually still in college at that point.
I thought you were in diapers. I wasn't sure. At any rate, also, my wife did research work. She found around 1925 in the Lowell Sun that the radio schedules for stations in New York, Chicago, even St. Louis were printed in the Lowell Sun.
Sure, that was a big deal because the stations, you know, they were only on, as Lee just said, for a few hours a night. And in some cases, there were entire nights of the week when they didn't broadcast. And so that was a big deal in the 20s and into the 30s. What was called DXing, receiving distance signals.
I am a great DXer, getting over 900 radio stations right from eastern Massachusetts.
Excellent. However, there are still people active in the hobby around here. It's not as big as it used to be, but my friends, the National Radio Club.
Audio service you're familiar with, I believe.
I certainly am.
So on. But I want to give 1 minute worth of WBZ memories. And the minute would include 6:15, weekday nights, sports program, Bump Hadley, a former New York Yankee pitcher, had the show, and he would close it with heads up and keep pitching.
He was from Lynn, Massachusetts, by the way, Bump Hadley.
Yeah. And then there was Leo Egan that took over after Bump Hadley. And, of course, later on, Guy Minella had the talk show.
Calling All Sports, right.
I remember the old WBZ station break. You'd hear the NBC chimes, and then WBZ, the Hotel Bradford, Boston, and WBZA, the Hotel Kimball, Springfield.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Carl DeSouze woke you up in the morning. His theme song, Keep Your Sunny Side Up.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, newscasts. They were 15-minute newscasts, 6 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock noon, 6 o'clock in the evening, and 11 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, the concept of hourly news was not...
No, but you had the 15 minutes, so you had pretty good coverage at that time.
And Don Kent, we haven't mentioned Don Kent yet.
Right. WBC memories, along with, of course, all the NBC shows and NBC early on. They were the leading network.
All right. Well, Bob, I thank you very much for the memories. I thank you for the call.
Very good, Steve. Thank you for the show.
You bet.
Bye.
Take care. Yeah, Don Kent, one of the pioneers in weather forecasting, period, and then one of the pioneers in bringing the weather forecast to radio and television. He wasn't the very first. A lot of people think he was. E.B. Rideout on WEEI was the first regularly scheduled weather forecaster who actually worked for a radio station as opposed to working for the National Weather Service, because that's what most stations used to do, is they would have the National Weather Service forecast. Even into the 60s, stations were doing that. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't do it now. They probably do. But the high-profile weather forecasters, E.B. Rideout being the first, but Don Kent certainly turned it into an art form.
And he was respected nationwide. I was just reading, you remember Harry Volkman out of Chicago?
Yeah.
He was a big name in Chicago. He wrote a book recently, and one of the guys he talked about as being his early heroes, well, he mentioned Rideout, and of course Don Kent as being one of his heroes. And this was coming out of Chicago and the Midwest. So, yeah, it's one of the great things about this signal. It went everywhere.
And also the sports angle, BZ has been the voice of... I don't know every of one of the local teams, but certainly most of them. I mean, we had the Patriots for many years, a couple of different times. We had the Celtics when I was a kid. We had the Bruins at one time.
Yep.
Did we have the Red Sox way back? I don't know. I know
the
HDH
Red Sox
when I was a kid. HDH.
Very briefly here. They've always, for whatever reason, wanted to have more local stations peppered around New England than to be on the big booming.
We were too big a signal. Yeah.
I wish they were on this signal right now. Drives me crazy in Rochester.
I can't
hear the games there very well.
What about the Boston Braves? Did we ever carry them?
They were definitely on here. I think I think that may have been the first sporting event that was on here. It was a Boston Braves game around, I want to say, 1924, I think, was the first. And they were doing, again, it was very sophisticated. They were doing interviews with players from the dugout. They had, it was somebody sitting there with a microphone at a table on the, on the sidelines of the game, basically.
Wow.
And they were inventing it as they went along.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the amazing thing to me is that some of the things, when you listen to recordings of really old radio broadcasts from the 20s or 30s, you hear stuff that you still hear today. I'm sure you've heard this. There's a well-known recording of Arthur Godfrey doing the morning show at WTOP in Washington many years ago, I think from the 1930s. And the first time I heard that, which is probably like 20 years ago, I thought, my gosh, this, I don't know if he invented this stuff or somebody was doing it before him, but this guy is doing what I hear people do on morning shows today.
Absolutely. There were elements that came along later. The traffic reports didn't come along until considerably later in the game, for instance. But a lot of those pieces were there. I mean, what do you want to know when you get up in the morning? You want to know what happened overnight. You want to know what the weather's going to be. You want to know if the Sox won.
Yep. And that's always been what you want to know.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's what you want to know then. That's what you want to know now, right? We're going to continue with your phone calls in just a few minutes. 617-254-1030 is our number. Scott Feibusch is our guest, a radio historian and a broadcaster himself. And he runs Northeast Radio Watch, which has all kinds of information about what's going on in this business on a weekly basis. Feibusch.com is his website. Check out the website. Again, if you're interested in radio at all, I mean, if you're really interested in radio, go to Feibusch.com and you will find something of interest to you. Let's do the lottery numbers right now. The Mass Evening 0603. 0603 is the Mass Evening number. Mass Cash 6, 9, 13, 16, 22. Tri-State Evenings, the Pick 3, 6, 5, 9. The Pick 4, 9, 7, 6, 4. There was a time not too long ago where I couldn't read the lottery numbers on the radio. I was working in the business then, but we couldn't do the lottery numbers. And then you could do the lottery numbers of another state only if there was also a lottery in your state. I remember that. The rules changed several times. Sports, the Patriots over the Chargers, 35-24. Patriots win. Red Sox lose to the Rays, 9-6. The Rays now within two games of the Red Sox wildcard lead. The extended WBZ AccuWeather forecast, mainly clear, breezy overnight. The low temperature 51 in town, 45 well inland. Sunny to partly cloudy during the day with a high of 64. Monday night, partly cloudy, the low 53. Tuesday, clouds, some sun, a shower around, the high 68. Wednesday, partly sunny and warmer with a high of 73. Right now, we have 48 degrees in Boston at WBEZ. Tomorrow, in the first couple of hours of the program, we'll have radio historian Donna Halper in the studio. And as we are starting on this program, the 90th anniversary celebration here at WBZ, we'll be ending it tomorrow in the midnight to 2 period with Donna Halper. So there's more radio history coming up and special stuff on the station all day long. Keep it tuned right here. Here comes CBS News and the Steve Lavelli broadcast on WBZ.
CBS News Update, I'm Sharon Middleman. At the Emmys, a repeat big winner.
And the Emmy goes to Mad Men.
For the fourth year in a row, Matthew Weiner is Mad Men's creator.
They're so talented and so gifted, and we all get to go to work tomorrow, and that's all we ever wanted to do. This is, for us and our families, this is an incredible dream. Thank you.
Modern Family won Outstanding Comedy Series. Director Martin Scorsese won his first Emmy for HBO's Boardwalk Empire.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you. Okay, they're counting down. I'm going to talk a little faster.
Deposed former star of Two and a Half Men, Charlie Sheen, was a presenter. He offered kind words to his former colleagues.
We spent 8
wonderful years together, and I know you will continue to make great television.
CBS News Update, I'm Sharon Middleman.
All right, calm down. Tonight, it's the season premiere of How I Met Your Mother, followed by the premiere of the new 2.5 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I know, the excitement has been building all summer, but you have to relax. We're talking comedy history. Who isn't dying to find out what's going to happen? Wait, calm down. Then the executive producer of Sex and the City brings you TV's most anticipated new comedy, Two Broke Girls. Breathe. Premiere Monday, tonight, only CBS.
I'm okay.
Can the clean web give green technologies a boost? I'm Martin LaMonica with a Green Minute from CNET. The explosion in information technologies and mobile devices is opening up many new ways to use natural resources more efficiently. In San Francisco, a group of software developers and entrepreneurs held a weekend clean web hackathon. They wrote apps to help consumers lead a greener lifestyle. The winner was a browser plugin that lets online shoppers see the energy consumption of electronics and other products. Another app helps consumers pick a less congested and thus less polluting drive to work. Some connect like-minded people, including one to help people barter homegrown food. These prototype applications may never become commercial products, but the clean web concept is a promising intersection of technology and the environment. For more green technology news, visit cnet.com/greentech.
The Green Minute from cnet.com.
Football season is here, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to tailgate. Visit tailgatefan.com. Choose your location, invite your friends, and party hard. A tailgate can happen anywhere, but all great tailgates start at tailgatefan.com.
Enough is enough. I need to do something about my drinking before it causes any more problems in my life. I've tried to stop on my own, but I always go back to drinking after a few days. People around me know that I drink, but nobody knows just how much. I'm tired of constantly hiding my drinking and hiding from other people. I need to make this change so I can start living my life again.
Boston University Psychiatry Associates are conducting a research study for people who have a hard time cutting back or quitting drinking. They're testing medications for the treatment of alcohol problems. Qualified subjects will receive study medication and outpatient study-related medical care at no cost. Participation is confidential and no health insurance is needed. Call 888-41-CHANGE to learn more about this treatment research program. Offices serve Boston and the South Shore. Again, the number to call, 888-41-CHANGE. 888-41-CHANGE.
You're tuned to the Steve Lavelle Broadcast on WBZ News Radio 1030.
25 in front of 2. Well, we were talking last hour, Scott, about how WBZ started out in Springfield, and some of what was then WBZ is still there.
It is. That's a remarkable thing. So much of early broadcasting just went away on the wind. You know, these stations were built cheaply and moved quickly, and things were not saved. And the amazing thing is that the original towers of WBZ, where those broadcasts originated 90 years ago today, September 19th, 1921, those towers are still there.
Really?
If you go out Page Boulevard in East Springfield, right off 291 out there, the old Westinghouse factory is still there. It's kind of run down these days. But there are two towers on the roof of that plant there, and there was a wire strung between them and a shack on the roof there. Wire is gone, the shack is gone, the towers are still there. I believe it is by far the oldest existing piece of radio infrastructure.
Wow.
That is left in America, and it is about to come down.
Oh, really?
Which just breaks my heart. The land...
They're going to build something else there?
They're going to build, I guess, a shopping center or something there. Right. Somebody's got to find a way to save these towers. Because this is our history, it's our industry's history,
yeah.
And nothing else. You can't go to where KDKA started. They took that building down a few years ago. The towers were gone long before that. You can't go to where WWJ in Detroit started or where KCBS. And you can go to where WBZ started. You could go, and I probably will on the way back to Rochester tomorrow. You can go and park in that parking lot and look up those towers up on the roof there.
Wow, that's amazing.
And they were still in use as late as 1962. That's the other amazing thing for the old WBZA Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
The other
are those call letters still in Glens Falls, New York?
WBZA? They are in Rochester, New York.
Oh, they're in
now.
Rochester now.
Yeah, it's funny. The general manager put them on the air in Rochester. It's a station called The Buzz.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Glens Falls.
Okay.
And he knew them from there. And I said, you realize they've got a long history before that, don't you? And he had no idea. I said,
That's cool that they're still going.
So I get to listen to WBZA at home.
That's great.
It's not coming from the Hotel Kimball in Springfield.
And then you pick us up at night.
I absolutely do.
Or in the early morning, I guess, with your schedule.
I do on occasion if I'm working the morning shift. Believe me, that 10:30 button on my radio is punched in on the way to work.
Thank you very much. Let's go to New York. Joe, you're on WBZ with Scott Feibusch.
Steve, good morning.
Hi there.
Mr. Feibusch, good morning, sir.
Hi there.
I had a question about radio technology, and I apologize in advance if asking this question people don't have the answer. But when did the technology progress to a point where stations could broadcast incoming phone calls over the air for a regular program format?
Late 50s, early 60s was really when it happened. There were a combination of reasons why they couldn't do it before then. The technology wasn't there to separate out the two halves of the conversations so that you didn't get the host audio on there. There were legal restrictions. You know, Steve was mentioning before he couldn't broadcast the lottery numbers. There was a time when either you couldn't broadcast a phone call, or do you remember in the early days you'd hear that beep?
Oh, yes.
That had to go on there to indicate if the call was being recorded.
Right.
But it was really the late 50s, early 60s. And I believe Jerry Williams, again, was one of the pioneers of making that happen. I think there were a couple of talkers out in Los Angeles who were behind that, too. That's really when it started, and then also you needed to have the delay mechanism.
Right, which when they started with Jerry over at WMEX, they did not have at the beginning. There was no delay. So people could say whatever they wanted.
People were more polite then, I think.
Well, that's true, too. That's true. You didn't have to worry about it as much then.
It was a dignified thing to be calling a radio station and put on the air. You wouldn't say Baba Booey then.
Yeah,
well, it seems that from a marketing aspect, it's good for advertisers because it keeps the dollars, it keeps the stations in the red for the advertising dollars itself.
Yeah, the argument was made, a lot of the stations that were doing talk radio and that were doing all news radio, they made the argument, we are the front of mind station. People are listening actively to us. We're not just background music.
Right.
Yes, I've been listening to talk radio for some 35 years now. In fact, specifically to this station when Janet Jagielian was doing the overnight.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I don't remember that.
Well, over the years.
In the 80s, I guess?
That was probably mid-1980s, I suppose.
Yeah. Hmm. When I lived in New York, I couldn't pick us up because I was in the immediate New York area, so Winds was in the way. Mm-hmm. So I could never pick us up from there. But, I wasn't aware that she worked here. I know she worked at another station in town.
Yes.
All right. Well, Joe,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Let's go to Clinton. Bob, you're on WBZ.
Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
Regular listener. Hi, Scott.
Hi there.
Great show. So much information. So interesting. I love the nostalgia stuff. God, I remember listening to WBZ growing up as a kid, listening to Streeter Stewart, Carl D'Souza, Arch McDonald, Dave Maynard. And, of course, one of the best things on BZ, absolutely the best, was Don Kent saying, "No school today." No song.
Yes.
That was one of the best things I could hear on the station.
For sure.
Oh, many great memories of BZ. I like your show, Steve.
Thank you.
One of my favorite shows that you have is when you have Mel on.
We'll have him on again soon. As a matter of fact, he's going to be on next week.
Great. Looking forward to it. I just had a question. A station that used to be in Framingham that was taken over number of years ago by somebody else. You must remember WKOX.
I interned there, as a matter of fact. And if you remember Ed Donahue, who was here for a number of years and is now with AP in Washington, he was my news director there, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That was another station that we listened to a lot, being from Natick. And my neighbor was the meteorologist there for many, many years, Roland Boucher.
Mm-hmm.
A good neighbor. He was a heck of a good egg. Yeah, so those were the two main stations that I listened to growing up with many great memories. Just want to thank you again for the great show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Take care. That's one of the things that ticks me off about radio today is that the smaller stations and the smaller markets that used to have a full-fledged staff have, if they're still on the air, they, and most of them are, they are simulcasting a syndicated program, maybe a network program. This is the same program I can find in other spots on the dial in the same market sometimes. And I said to you off the air, when a college student says to me, well, how did you get started, or how do I get started? I can't tell them to do what I did, because you can't do that anymore. You can't go out to a small station and get a job like you could then, because there's hardly any jobs at those small stations now.
I remember being an intern at WKOX and going out and covering Ashland Town Meeting or what have you. And yeah, the opportunity to do that just isn't there. I think of the people that I worked with here in the newsroom, you know, some of whom had been here since the 70s or the 80s, and they had almost universally started out at little stations in Maine. Deb Lawler came out of Kellis, Maine, I believe. Those opportunities just aren't, well, the station actually in Kellis is still there, bless them. But the opportunities to do that just aren't there the way they once were. The chance to go out there, make your mistakes on a little 1,000-watt station.
Right.
And learn how to do it right so that someday you could come to a WBZ. I don't know what to tell people either, and there aren't as many people asking me as there used to be.
Well, that's true, too, because they're more likely to go to television or now, and this is really still in its infancy, to an internet job. There aren't the places to go. And talking about covering the Ashland Town Meetings, things like that don't get covered on local radio anymore, because there's no one to cover them.
Not the way they used to, of course. And now you have websites. You know, you have an Ashland Patch or whatever that's covering those. And I guess that's where the kids are getting their experience and earning their $22 and putting gas in the tank. But it's not the same as being out there covering a bank robbery in Lowell on a Saturday morning.
I'll bet. Yeah. I used to, you know, do the morning news at various little stations that I worked at. You know, after having covered the city council or the school committee or the sewer commission the night before. Well, hey, the sewer commission, that was a very controversial board to be covering, let me tell you, up in Amsterdam, New York, many years ago. 617-254-1030 is our number. Radio historian Scott Feibusch is our guest, and we'll continue with Scott and your phone calls in just a couple of minutes here on WBZ.
The phone number is 617-254-1030. The program is the Steve Lavelli Broadcast. The station is WBZ News Radio 1030. Around the World for Free is the ultimate interactive reality series featuring your host and brave adventurer, Survivor winner Parvati Shallow. Follow her as she circumnavigates the globe in 100 days with no money for season 3 of this award-winning web series, Around the World for Free. Parvati needs your help, as this interactive series is all about your input on a daily basis. Join the journey in real time, live now at cbs.com/world. Around the World for Free, sponsored by AT&T.
196,000, the number of people who recently said goodbye to pay TV. I'm Brian Cooley with Technology by the Numbers from CNET. 196,000 people have decided they don't want to pay for TV anymore, according to a new analysis of 8 of the 9 largest pay TV companies done by the Associated Press. Other analyses put the lost subscribers higher at up to 450,000 net. And the two U.S. satellite TV companies had a combined loss of subscribers for the first time. Now, the number of lost pay TV subs is only about 0.2% of the 83.2 million subscribers these companies enjoy across 70% of U.S. households. So what does this mean? The economy is tough, and people are making cuts in their budgets. Budgets that typically didn't include a monthly broadband bill last recession. As they look to tighten their belts this time around, pay TV may come up one hole short of the buckle. Shoot me your comments or questions about digital living at facebook.com/AskCNET. I'm Brian Cooley.
I'm Mark Sanchez with a message for women. This is the actual sound of my heartbeat. I'm sharing my heart to let you know that the symptoms of women's heart attacks can be different from men's. Cover your heart. Learn more. CBS Cares.
FDIC member DIF, equal housing lender.
Right now, there are more than 305,000 children in Massachusetts living in homeless or low-income situations. Join Cradles to Crayons as it equips local children with the everyday essentials they need to feel safe, warm, ready to learn, and valued. Go to cradlestocrayons.org to find out how you can get involved. cradlestocrayons.org.
Diamonds, the gift that lasts forever. And there's never been a better time to buy. Diamond prices are going crazy. The Jewelry Exchange has a huge stock they imported before the prices went up. The Jewelry Exchange has certified 1-carat round and fancy-shaped solitaires for just $18.90. 1 to 2-carat standard solitaires are just $9.90 per carat. And we're holding the price on our 1-carat studs at $3.99. This is an incredible value. The Jewelry Exchange has the hottest designer lines in micro pave, invisible, and platinum. We set in size while you wait and guarantee the rings we make to appraise for double. Some restrictions apply. 2-carat amethyst and diamond pendants are just $39. 3-stone rings start at just $169. And we have thousands of rings, bracelets, earrings, and pendants all at incredible prices. Plus, no interest for 6 months. Don't miss this opportunity before prices go up. Buy factory direct and save the Jewelry Exchange in Sudbury. 978-443-0550. That's the Jewelry Exchange in Sudbury, 443-0550. Or shop at jewelryexchange.com.
Traffic on the threes. Weather on the 10s all day long on WBZ News Radio 1030, streaming live at cbsboston.com.
12 minutes in front of 2, we have radio historian Scott Feibusch in the studio. Why? Because today is the 90th anniversary of the first broadcast of this radio station, WBZ. It was out of Springfield then. It's been out of Boston for a long time. We are 90 years old today, and all day long on the station, you'll be hearing special features about our 90 years on the air. And on tomorrow's program, in the first couple of hours, another radio historian will join us. Donna Helfer will be with us in the studio. We'll take some more of your calls for Scott, and Scott's been kind enough to agree to stay past 2 o'clock, so we'll have him for an extra hour. So for the folks on hold, if you don't get in right now, hold on, we'll get you in next hour. Let's go to Methuen Lawrence here on WBZ.
Hello, Steve, and hello, Scott.
Hi, Lawrence.
Hi there.
Okay, Scott knows me, so he knows I have to start with a joke. What radio station that preceded WBZ on the air will be celebrating Talk Like a Pirate Day today?
That would be KDKA in Pittsburgh.
No, WRR in Dallas. The reason I called my first station when I first military station when I was in the Air Force was in Spokane, Washington, and it was on a night like this when I lived off base and in an apartment building. Everybody's TV sets were off and no fluorescent lights were on, and I actually picked up WBZ in Spokane, Washington.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
With an ordinary cable radio. I didn't have some great big antenna on the roof or anything. Now, in those days, WBZ said that they reached 38 states. I would say that they were understating it. I mean, they got all the way to Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
There were a few more states than they gave credit for.
Up until the 1970s, and you know this, Lawrence, this was the only thing on the air at night in the United States on 1030.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now there are about a dozen in the central and eastern parts. When David Bradbury was alive and broadcasting, his family used to be able to listen to him until one day a station went on the air in Maplewood, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and that was the end there. Mm. Now there's a nighttime facility in Chicago, Memphis, and a town called OVIEDO. I don't know exactly how it's pronounced.
Oviedo,
so there's
Florida.
There's a big arc of signals that might block it for many of the people who used to get it very far away.
Wow. Yeah, it's too bad that, as far as I'm concerned, that was ever allowed to happen, but there you go. The companies didn't put up a stink when the FCC loosened the rules.
Well, I remember also when I was in the Pacific Northwest, there was a station in Albuquerque on a lower sea clear channel, 770, and they were involved for many years. It seemed that they were on the air being heard all over the western United States. And a station at 770 in New York said, "We want to get these guys off the air. They're interfering with us somewhere." And yet, KOB in Albuquerque had a pretty good case. We're serving our people, and
Well, you obviously know your stuff, Lawrence, but do you have a question for Scott?
Oh, okay. I was just making that observation. One technological advance that hasn't been talked about as a series one was the directional AM antenna that allowed many more stations to go on the air, and some of them did it just to be able to squeeze themselves in, but WBZ did it in order to put out that giant signal, which I think is over 100,000 watts in true effective radio power to the west.
It is one, and I mentioned earlier in the broadcast that we moved in 1931 to Millis, Massachusetts. In 1940, they moved from Millis, which was kind of not the best choice of a transmitter site, out to Hull, where they are now. And in doing it, there was no point putting a lot of signal out to the east and serving the fish demographic out there.
Right.
And so, yeah, they installed that two tower. And at one point, they actually looked, believe it or not, in raising power all the way up to 750,000 watts.
Really?
And they were going to move the transmitter all the way out, I believe, to Provincetown.
Wow.
And just blast three-quarters of a million watts.
Broadcast to everybody.
Back at New England and at the world. And, of course, had that happened, a lot of those other 1030s out west and down south.
Yeah.
Never would have. That Albuquerque station, by the way, is in my calendar this year.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I'll check that out. All right, Lawrence.
Happy to talk to you, Scott. See you someday.
All right. Take care, Lawrence. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Let's go right here to Brighton. Mike, you're on WBZ.
Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
Hi, Scott. Great guest. Hello.
Thank you.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah.
I got a couple of questions, if I may. I can remember when WBZ used to be Soldiers Field Road before they built the gates down the harbor. Used to always flood. And I was wondering if that made a difference on signal. And, you know, when the turnpike used to, before they built the turnpike, used to be all farmland cattle yards down there.
None of that would have really made a difference in our signal because, except when we've been on the backup transmitter here, we don't use Soldiers Field Road as a transmitter site for AM.
Right.
Interesting enough, before WBZ was here on this property, WCOP actually did have their transmitters here. And I don't know if you remember this, Steve, when they were expanding the building in the mid-1990s to build on the addition for the new TV newsroom and where we're sitting now, they actually found one of the foundations to one of the WCOP towers.
Somebody
called me over because they knew I was into this stuff.
Right.
And they came running to me and said, "You got to come see what we found here. It's one of the WCOP tower footings." And nobody else in the building
cared. You might get a kick out of this, Scott. You're the guy who used to be on Talking About Radio with Bob Bidnell, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I used to listen to that show. I love that station. You know, I like, Steve will tell you, I love music. I listen to this at night because I can't be blasting the music, you know? I listen to Steve at night because I have to shut down the music about 12.
Oh, there you go.
But I used to be able to pick up WCOP on one of my fillings in my teeth when I put a fork on it.
You must have lived in Lexington, I'm guessing.
You know what I did, too? I used to go metal detecting. Matter of fact, I was very lucky. I found about 5 pounds of gold with metal detecting. And I wonder if you could maybe talk a little about it, radio signals with... I don't know if you guys are familiar with Paul Revere, got a lot of his metal for the silversmith back in the 1700s there over at Ringer Park up in Alston.
Okay.
I did not know that.
I mean, he didn't have metal detector back then. I mean, I've been metal detecting all over the place, and I was wondering if you could maybe, if you had any experience, maybe you could mention it.
Mention what?
How radio can detect minerals in the ground.
You know anything about that? Because I don't.
A little outside my area of expertise. I know they work. They go beep when you find metal under them. Beyond that, I'm afraid that's...
You know all I can say to you guys? Happy birthday, BZ.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, BZ. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Mike from Brighton, fading out into the sunset. Singing Mike. I grew up in Burlington, so we could pick up WRKO on my dad's guitar amplifier when it was off, as long as it was faced in the right direction.
Oh, I believe it. But the question Mike asked at the beginning about the flooding in the water, it is absolutely true. For an AM station, you want to be near water, preferably salt water, which is why the location where WBZ has been since 1940 in Hull is such a phenomenal one, because you go out there, I don't know if you've ever actually walked out the catwalk between the two towers out there.
No.
You walk out and you're just surrounded by marshland, and there is nothing but salt water between you and downtown Boston.
Norm Nathan, I met when he first worked, when I first met him, he was working at WHDH, and of course, there. In-house joke way back was number one ship to shore, because their signal went east at that time.
We all dead haddock.
That's right. That's right.
Which is not what the calls really stand for, no matter how many places you may read that.
Is that one, did they stand for anything, or was that another one?
That was sequential.
Yeah.
There were a lot of call signs that were simply issued sequentially, and it was actually the middle letter. Sometimes they progressed. So the WNAC in Boston, for instance, was part of an early series that had an A in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
WHDH, you can actually, if you look at the records of when these call signs were issued, you would find, I think it would be WHDI after that, and so on and so forth. So there are, a lot of those were sequential. WBZ, I think, was just available because a ship had used it.
Nobody was using it, right?
Nobody was using it, and somebody at the Department of Commerce said, okay, that'll work.
It's like if a band wanted to call themselves the Beatles. No one's using that name now, so they could probably do it, right? No.
There is only one WBZ.
Now, when we come back, and Scott has kindly agreed to stay for another hour, so we'll take some more phone calls, we'll ask Scott some more questions, and maybe get an inside story or two about WBZ in the 1990s when Scott worked here in our newsroom. What were you, a writer, editor, producer? What'd you do there? All of that?
I started out as a tape op, back when there was such a thing as tape ops.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was a writer, I did some editing, I did some stringing for the networks, produce some anniversary specials, whatever they would let me do.
Right. And got on the air a few times.
Every once in a while.
Yeah. All right, so we'll continue with Scott Feibusch. Feibusch.com is his website, F-Y-B-U-S-H, F-Y-B-U-S-H, real simple, Feibusch, just like it sounds, basically. Feibusch.com, check that out. You'll find Northeast Radio Watch there. You'll see how you can get a tower site calendar for 2012 and a lot of other radio information at Feibusch.com. Back after the 2 o'clock news, Vanessa Pruitt is producing the Steve Lavelli broadcast on WBZ News Radio 1030.
You're on driving a brand new Subaru Outback. Subaru's road gripping symmetrical all-wheel drive takes you safely off the beaten path. Awarded top safety pick by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the Subaru Outback was the winner of the 2011 ALG Residual Value Award with the highest predicted resale value in its class. Drive home a brand new Subaru Outback for only $23,495 and fall in love. Plus, get 1.9% financing for up to 36 months. For complete details and a list of Subaru dealers, go to NewEnglandSubaru.com. Love, it's what makes a Subaru.
Ooh, it's love.
WBZ, WBZ HD, WBZ FM HD3, Boston, a CBS radio station.
New England's News Watch never stops. On WBZ News Radio 1030 and CBSBoston.com.